Thank you very much. It's really my pleasure to be here. This is, in a sense, it's not. They cleared the title, or I probably wrote the title. I forget, but I shouldn't have written exactly this one because, in fact, it should have been politics and politics, politics and policy for the elderly in Japan, which is really what I'm going to talk about. I wrote a book about that. I brought it. I think it cost about $50. But it came out a long time ago. This book came out in 1993, I think. And it came out in Japanese in 1995 or 96. It's called How Policies Change, the Japanese Government and the Aging Society. And that was a book about policy and the politics of policy change for programs related to old people in Japan, pensions, healthcare, social welfare, employment programs, lots of small programs, trying to be as inclusive as I could. As I see, it took me 400 pages to do it. It covered the period from 1952 to 1990. One of my findings was that the public actually hasn't been very much involved in all this, I'll talk about the role of the public in policymaking today, because things have changed at least a little bit. But let me start with the obvious question: why is policy for the aging an important topic for Japan? Nobody here needs to, be convinced of that point. You all know the answer to that question, but let me just show it dramatically. Just because I happened to cross these slides, and they show it pretty well. This is the This is the age pyramid for the population of Japan in 1950. This is the year 2000. This is the year 2050. Seeing it that way, I mean, we all knew it, but you see it that way, and you can see how things are really changing pretty rapidly. And my interest is in public policy, and when you think of these kinds of population changes and what they mean for public policy, there are actually lots of answers to it, but the three main topics, I think, first, how can all these old people be supported economically, which is an issue of pension policy? How can their illnesses, their rather frequent illnesses or infirmities compared to younger people, be treated? That's a question of healthcare policy. And then how can people who a substantial proportion of older people as they get older can no longer completely take care of themselves? How is it that they're able to be, how can they live a somewhat decent life? That's a question of long-term care policy, and those are going to be my three topics today. And what I'm going to do is talk about policy and politics in each of these three areas, and at least without too much oversimplification, I can say that the policy process here has gone through the same three stages for all three of those. The first of those stages is a period of expansion, when public programs for older people were established or grew rapidly. And my argument, which a lot of people wouldn't go along with, but I'm pretty convinced of it, is that this has basically been the project of politicians. It's been the outcome of party politics. The second stage has been one of reform and rationalization. A little too simple to say just cutting back, but in any case, constraining or convenient word, rationalization. Nobody knows exactly what it means. And that mostly has been in the hands of bureaucrats in this particular policy area. Obviously, I call it here the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare. Through most of this period, it was just the Ministry of Health and Welfare. The third stage, I just call here the currently more complicated situation, because a lot has been going on in all three of these areas, but it can't be characterized quite as simply as the way I put it for the first two areas. But I'm going to get to all that, so I won't talk about it more. After I do that for each area, I'll talk a little bit about the decision-making patterns that we see in each of these three sectors. And then I'll say a word at the end, not very much. I hope there'll be some discussion about what the politics of old age policy in Japan looks like more generally. Why do I say that the process now is more complicated? Well, partly it's just because it has been. What's been going on is kind of hard to understand. But there are reasons for it, because the whole political system or overall social system of Japan, even aside from population change, has changed quite a good deal. Just some of the highlights thereof. In this period, the left has disappeared in Japan. We used to have what was called a one-and-a-half-party system, but it was fairly simply understood as a left-to-right. These days, the ideological spread in Japanese politics, I call it from the right to the middle muddle, nothing on the left, and you could sort of call it a two-and-a-half-party system later. I thought, I don't know, three-and-a-half-party system, two-and-three-quarter-party system, but in any case, politics has certainly changed a good deal. And there is, in a sense, something like a two-party system, but not much of a left-right ideology. A second, in very recent years, we've seen a big emphasis on top-down policymaking as compared to what we had before, particularly Prime Minister Koizumi and the CEFP, is the Council of Economic and Fiscal Policy. That's its official name, always known as the Shimon Kaigi. The idea that public policy should be made up at the top in the Kante and under the auspices of the Prime Minister and then pushed down to the levels below. That's certainly, whether you like it or not, it's a new trend in Japanese polity, and it's been important. There's certainly a general air of hostility to the bureaucracy, particularly hostility toward the Ministry of Health and Welfare, with very good reason, one must confess. As somebody who's been hanging around with those guys for the last 30 years, it's really kind of embarrassing how badly things have been going. But it's a factor, is that people used to think they were sort of competent, and now they don't, and it's a problem. And then maybe the most important point is the bursting of the bubble, or not so much the whole period since 1990, but rather the way the poor economy led to something that they at least purport to call a fiscal crisis and an austerity campaign to try and cut back on expenditures to achieve what they call, and I won't go into what it is, the primary balance by the year 2011, which requires, since they're not willing to raise taxes, requires a lot of cuts in government spending. So all of those have been important factors in the way old age policy in these three areas has been working through this period. Actually, the more specifically, the biggest problem with regard to social policy is that in the year 2006, 2 years ago, the government resolved to trim, this was out of the Shimon Kaigi, to trim what is called the Social Security Spending Natural Increase, Shakai Hosho Hi no Shizenzo. The amount, it has to go up a certain amount just to take care of aging and the maturation of the pension system and so forth. And so they're not cutting the actual amount, but they said they'd cut about $1 billion, about a trillion yen, out of that amount over a five-year period. And this has put very, very heavy pressure on the Ministry of Health and Welfare, Health, Labor, Wealth, I know, I've forgotten what we call it, Health, Korosho, and the Korosho to do something with their budgets. I think this is a really wrong-headed policy. This is I'm not giving you too many of my opinions in this talk, but this is one. It's inevitable that rapid aging brings a certain amount of cost increases on that one hand, but on the other hand, Japan is woefully behind in all kinds of social policies, social welfare, not for older people. Japan does pretty well with older people, by and large, but there was an NHK special about it just the other day on how way below other European countries, to some extent, even the United States, on family policy and employment-related subjects and many other subjects. And it seems to me in this day and age, with the way Japanese society has been changing, the much more needs to be done in this area. That's a whole different talk. I've actually given it, and if somebody wants to invite me, I'll give it again. I'm quite, feel passionate about that subject, but it's not my topic today. What I want to do now is look at our three policy areas one by one, from the past to the present. First, I'm going to talk about pension policy. For pensions and for all the other policy areas I'm doing, I'm not describing the systems to you at all. I don't have time. It's really, it's complicated. It's necessary to know. It may be hard to follow what I'm saying if you don't understand something about it, but I'm just really not able to go into. Obviously, I'll respond to any questions afterwards that you might have. But so this is a real canned real quick little history. But what I'd like to start with is Kaininking. Kaihōken Kaininking was the LDP's slogan in the late 1950s when they were facing a threat from the Socialist Party, particularly in the countryside, interestingly enough. And they answered by trying to spread the kind of programs, pensions and health care, that had been available to urban modern sector workers through the whole country. The Kaihōken means health care for all, pensions for all. On the pension side, that led to the so-called national pension system, Kokumin Nenkin. It's a terrible system. I've often called it the worst pension system ever put in effect by any national government. It's just awful. It has an inadequate, at the time, everybody knew this in 1959. All the experts knew it. Ministry of Health and Welfare knew it. They opposed it at the time, but it was a political order, and they put it through, as I say, an inadequate fiscal base and the only serious pension system that's based on voluntary contributions. And it's not legally voluntary. You have to contribute, but in fact, a third of the people that are supposed to be contributing to Kokumin Nenkin aren't, and nothing happens to them. Well, you know, it's ridiculous. The whole, it's just awful. And indeed, pensions went, so that system, it's still with us, sad to say, but pensions also had a big expansion in the 1970s. Benefits went up a lot. They actually more than doubled. And that also was largely a product of political pressure, although that's a little more complicated. That was followed by a period of rationalization of pensions from the late 1970s. Basically, the Ministry of Health and Welfare, strongly pushed on by the Ministry of Finance, but it was all up to the Ministry of Health and Welfare, and they tried to raise the pensionable age. At that time, it was 60. They tried to stabilize revenues one way or another, and they tried to limit future benefits. I mean, that's a logical meaning of rationalization. And they had a lot of trouble doing it because they were opposed by the Liberal Democrats, who obviously didn't want to raise people's taxes. They didn't want to cut their benefits. It's logical enough for a political party. But nonetheless, the Ministry of Health and Welfare succeeded step by step, particularly in 1985, where with some really clever tactics, they managed to get a pretty substantial reform through that did straighten out some of the real problems in the pension system, although certainly not forever. The biggest reform of the pension system occurred 4 years ago in 2004, when the whole, both contributions, but particularly the benefit structure really was rationalized. It was a little bit like the Swedish pension reform, if anybody knows about that. It wasn't quite as radical, but it tried to tailor future benefits to the demographic and economic situation that evolves. And it's quite interesting, and it's a pretty good reform. American economists that have looked at it have thought pretty highly of it. Japanese economists don't like it, but they don't like any pension system, so that's to be expected. But more liberal economists think it made a fair amount of sense. The bureaucrats got this through, but it was a very turbulent time. Actually, one of the books I'm reviewing is a book of essays by economists, and one of the essays is by Henry Arron. Henry Arron is the dean of liberal economists, particularly public finance economists in the United States. And he wrote a very thoughtful and well-paced review of the Japanese pension and healthcare, the whole system in this book. It's a book by Kaizuka and Kruger. It's a pretty good book. But Arron said they got this through, and it's a good reform, but it passed after there was a lot of difficulty. There was a lot of resistance to it. And I said, gee, that's not the way I remember it. I was here in 2004, and I don't remember that much resistance to it. So I started looking back at newspaper articles and in preparation for this talk, actually. And what I found was that actually this reform itself was not, in its essence, really opposed very seriously by anybody. But what was going on at the same time was two things. One was this enormous kerfuffle about, remember this about the politicians, diet men, not paying their pension contributions, a super technical issue. They were in transition from one employment status to another, so they missed a year or so. There may have been more than that in some cases. Naoto Kan had to resign. Our current prime minister, Fukuyase, had to resign, and all because of all this. And it caused a big stir and rose up all these things. These government people are just, you know, they're just totally hypocritical, and they're not obeying the rules and so forth. So that was one issue. And then the other is that since 2000, the LDP and the Minshuto or Ozawa or whatever, but the opposition forces have been having this real important debate about pensions. It's quite a fundamental debate about, everybody knows the pension system needs restructuring, including taking care of the awful problem still with the Kokuminenkin, but how to do it. And the two parties have a big argument about that. In fact, the 2004 House of Councillors election happened at that time, as you may remember, it was a defeat for the LDP. And that was called a pension election. But I remember thinking at the time, in what sense is this a pension election? I mean, people are voting against the LDP or the party in power for all this, you know, these politicians that are cheating or something, although Minshuto politicians were involved as well. But and they're worried about their future pensions as well they should be, but why would it, to figure out why anybody would vote for the LDP as opposed to the opposition, depending on their pension position, is can't be true because nobody could understand it. I actually understood it for a while. I've since forgotten, but I've been working on, I've been doing pensions for about 20 years, and you can see it's a perfectly reasonable argument between the two parties, but it's not one that's immediately accessible to a voter unless things are really spelled out, and in this case, they weren't. Now, what's happened since then with pensions? Well, as you all know, a lot. Actually, pundits and polls are saying, again, pensions are the number one issue for Japanese voters. But once again, we have to ask, what is the issue that is at stake here? The biggest issue has been all these lost pension records. Well, the lost pension records are just terrible. It is just, it's shameful that this could have happened. It could have been covered up for so long. I can't condemn it enough. Both the Ministry of Health and Welfare was in charge of this, or Health and Labor. It was actually in the Social Insurance Agency, which is part of them but isn't part of them. That's part of the problem, I suppose. But in any case, it shouldn't have happened. But it's not a policy issue. Who can disagree about it? I mean, it was awful. Shouldn't have happened. It has to be corrected somehow. There's only one way to, not much argument about how to correct it. You just have to go through and do the best you can. So in that sense, it's not an issue. The serious issue, again, is how to reorganize the system, but we're still in the same argument, and people still don't understand it. The most fundamental sort of question is, do people want to pay lower contributions and have lower benefits, or do they want to pay higher contributions and have better benefits when they retire, right? Fundamental to all pension systems. In Germany, in the United States, you can generally find out, you know what the party positions are. The Republicans want lower contributions, the Democrats want bigger benefits, and you know, higher contributions one way or another. Some Republicans want to get rid of the whole system, but you can sort of tell what these arguments are. But the question in Japan is so clear cut, and I have never yet found a poll, maybe somebody here knows of one, where anybody ever asked that question of the Japanese public. They ask it in a vague way, but not in a way that, you know, where there's a scenario where you could actually understand it. So pensions today are, I would say, pretty confusing. The pattern of decision-making in pensions, looking as a political scientist for a minute, is that certainly public worries a lot about pensions, and with good reason. I mean, it's a serious issue for them, but in general, it's more of a worry than it is an opinion that amounts to much. Interest groups, interestingly enough, interest groups have not been important in pension policy in the United States. Kato Junko, well-known political scientist at Todai, wrote her master's thesis comparing medical care reform and pension reform, her master's thesis at Todai, and a wonderful thesis. It was later published as a book. And she pointed out medical field is full of interest groups, and in pension politics it really isn't. It's a different kind of politics than interest group politics. It is in other countries. In other countries, you have the labor unions lined up against big business. But that has, generally speaking, not been true in Japan. It's generally been true in Japan that politicians used to favor expansion. They always wanted more money out, less money contributed, and would oppose any restraints. And the bureaucrats fought with them about that. That's no longer true. Again, today, the two parties have different positions, but it isn't clear why. Okay. And generally speaking, bureaucrats have taken the lead on content for years. The initiative has come out of the pension bureau of the ministry, and other people react to that. That's all I'm going to say about pensions. Healthcare. And I'm talking here about healthcare for old people. I'm not talking about healthcare in general. And healthcare for old people, is marked by an expansion period, which in this case is quite clear-cut. In 1973, the Japanese started a program called Free Medical Care for Older People. It meant they didn't have any, it took away their copays, so they could just go up and get free medical, and particularly hospital care. It's very, very political, very bitterly opposed by the Ministry of Health and Welfare, although they couldn't get their act together well enough to oppose it successfully. But it was pushed through by the LDP, and the LDP pushed it through because such programs had been passed at a local level, mostly by socialists. Again, it was an electoral threat. It was another program that was badly designed. It was way too generous. It was opposed, as I say, by the ministry. It led in the 1970s to older people flooding into hospitals to stay, and it brought big increases in spending. This was followed by attempts at rationalization. In the late 1970s, the Ministry of Health and Welfare, pushed by, again, the Ministry of Finance, typically enough, tried to constrain this program, but they were opposed by the politicians, particularly by the LDP. You may recall political scientists in the room, there are a couple, will remember this was the era of Hakchu, in which there was kind of a rough balance between the opposition and the majority party in the Diet, and possibly for that reason people were... Conservative politicians were very wary about getting anybody mad at them. It was kind of a cautious period for them. But shortly thereafter, particularly after the LDP got a majority in 1980, a big majority, they did manage to get a bill called the Health Care for the Aged Law. Actually, I said here, Roken, which is what you call it for short, but the Rojin Hoken Ho, which sort of held back the old people program a little bit. It mainly changed the financing in a ways I won't describe, but it moved toward cross-subsidization by younger people's, the regular employees' health insurance programs into old age health insurance, because obviously their costs were much higher than younger people and they didn't have any incomes to speak of. It introduced tiny co-payments for older people. And then over 20 years since then, we've seen a whole series of kind of small reforms, step by step, quite an incremental process. Very much interest group politics, the Ministry of Health and Welfare basically negotiating them out with the Japan Medical Association, which generally speaking was backed up by the LDP. But step by step by step, the copays got bigger, et cetera. One example is that when the free medical care for older people and its modifications covered people from age 70, basically, and in this decade they stepped that age up year by year to get it up, so now that it starts in 1975. Age 75. Once it got to age 75, they then changed the system. Recent politics of healthcare have been quite turbulent, as you know, if you've been reading the papers, including yesterday, or for the last month or so. What happened was this fiscal austerity, as I said before, led to big pressure on spending on Social Security in general. And within Social Security, medical care is obviously an enormous item, and it's one that you can actually do something about, unlike pensions, which you do something about over decades. You can't do much about any current budget problems with pensions. And within medical care, older people were particularly a focus because they were consuming an awful lot of the money. And so in 2006, Koizumi himself and his minions and the Shimon Kaigi came up with a radical reform. Actually, don't hold me to exactly that. I didn't go back and look at what happened in 2006. A former welfare ministry, Niwa, was involved in this as well. But in any case, it was a top-down thing. It didn't come out of the bowels of the health and welfare or the health and labor ministry. The program was passed in 2006, and it was implemented just last month, April 1st, 2008. And all hell broke loose. What they did was invent a whole new system, and I'm going to have to take a couple of minutes to talk about this. It is very hard to get any information on this. It's impossible in English. There's nothing. But in Japanese, it's by no means easy, thanks to my colleague, Professor Ikegami, who's sitting here, one of the contributors to this big book, by the way. I've succeeded in trying to make some sense of it. I was away in the States when it was happening. I was trying to figure it out on the net, and it was by no means easy. The official term for this new program is the Koki Koresha Iryoseido. You translate that directly, it comes out as old people medical system. Old is a phrase American gerontologists use all the time. You say the old and the young old. Now they say the old, the middle old, the young old is 65 to 75, middle old 75 to 85, old 85 to 95. It's a common jargony word among the scholars in this field, but I think they just directly translated it into Koki. Koki isn't a word anybody ever is. I mean, people use it, but it's not at all in common parlance, although it's descriptive enough. The Ministry of Welfare suddenly realized that somebody realized that Koki actually, the trouble is it means latter period, but it also means final or the end, which has sort of an unfortunate nuance. So they decided, well, we should call it the Choju Iryoseido, the longevity. They use Choju Shakai. They've used that euphemism for aging for some time. Nobody uses it but them, but they've been giving it a try. And the newspapers, well, the official name is still the top one. Newspapers will sometimes put this in parentheses underneath. The slang term that everybody came up with is Hayoshine Hoken, or hurry up and die insurance. When I was looking at this from the States, I found I could get more hits from Google on this one than I could on the official name of the program. So people have been treating this program pretty cynically and with good reason. The interesting thing is there's no name for it in English. You look at the English papers or you look at local government websites and you see all kinds of names, all of which are sort of logical, but, you know, old age health insurance, elderly health insurance, something like that. It's not that they don't make sense, but it's nice to have an official name that we can use. The Kosei Sho, probably because they don't have a name in English, have so far refused to put anything up about it on their English website whatsoever. So you can find local governments, but they're all over the place. So I decided I needed to invent a term. So I think in English it should be called the old people system, which translates nicely as oops. So that's what I'll call it. Now, what were the problems that the government was trying to address with this new system? Why did they do this? And my argument is that there were two. This is an inference. You're not going to find this written down anyplace, God knows. But my view of it is that they were trying to address what they saw as two related problems. I probably should have done this in the other order, but in any case, one of them I'm calling here imbalance. And it relates to the question that most of the healthcare costs of older people, actually even people over 65, but particularly of over 75, most of that, around 90%, well, around 40% of it is paid by transfers from the younger people's health insurance systems, right? So when if you're in a kumiai nanking, or you're in a government employee, whatever it is, for the 100 yen that you pay in your health insurance premium, probably about 30 yen of that is actually going to support the healthcare costs of older people who you never met, you don't know them. Why should you, if you're an American, you think, why should I be paying for these people? So that's just a fact. The other 50% are paid for out of taxes, by the way. About 10% are paid for by the old people themselves. Now, whether or not it's fair or unfair, I don't know. I mean, that's you can decide for yourself. But in fact, as a political problem, employees and employers in this age of, you know, companies in this age of super competition and worried about costs and all of that, and local governments who had to make up some of this out of taxes, they were all complaining about these growing burdens, particularly since times were so tough. And the other trend that was happening, and this is true, is compared to the days when everybody thought old people were so kawaiso and anything we can do is okay and old people should be, they're all poor and weak and they all should be getting stuff for free. Gradually, it's been the case that older people's households have, on average, been getting richer. The pension system has gotten a lot better. Lots of these people have been putting their money into bank accounts, you know, for 40 or 50 years. It gets up to be a pretty good total. So there are economic statistics for this, that certainly in terms of assets, but particularly in terms of income, lots of older people households are better off than younger people households. So why should they be getting stuff for free? In the 1970s, every old person, everybody over age 65 in Japan got a free bus pass. A lot of people, you'll see them getting on the bus, and a lot of them still have a free bus pass, and those that don't have a discount pass. But in fact, you have to be of low income to get a free bus pass, which, you know, is appropriate. Why should somebody with more money than I have be riding the bus for free? Especially since they have all the time in the world, you know, so it doesn't matter when they get on the bus. But the, sorry, that's an ageist remark. So there was a policy to redress this balance, either partly because people thought it was wrong and partly because politically it was a problem that the level of this cross-subsidization was so high. That's problem one. Problem two is just sheer spending, the one that I mentioned before. There was a perception in Japan that medical spending was out of control. If you read editorials in Japanese newspapers, particularly the Yomiuri or Nikkei or many other things, anything by Japanese political economists, particularly those from Hitotsubashi, you will endlessly see that medical care spending is totally out of control in Japan. This is not correct. The reality is that medical spending in Japan is very low, and it has been extremely well controlled. It is amazing, given the aging of society, that the healthcare costs have been kept keeping to a growth rate of like 1 or 2% a year. American society isn't aging at all, and our healthcare costs go up anywhere from 9 to 15% a year. I mean, it's a whole different universe here. But conservatives, for very good reasons, don't want to recognize that point. And when fiscal stringency comes along, old people, healthcare spending in particular, healthcare spending becomes a target, and old age spending within it. Now, it's perfectly true, realistically speaking. However successful they may have been in controlling medical care spending, and I think they've been very successful. I should stick this book up, too. I saw this for the first time today. This is a book that Naoki Ikegami and I wrote. It came out in English. You've probably never seen it because it only, thanks to Cambridge University Press's massive public relations machine, it only sold about 300 copies in English. However, they just brought it out as a paperback on demand. So you can now get, instead of getting it for $80, you can now get it for $50 if you want it. The book in Japanese came out. It's called Nihon no Irio. It sold over 100,000 copies. So the book, some people think it's a pretty good book. But we tried to explain how cost control in the Japanese healthcare system works. But however nice things we say about how well it works, you cannot deny it's a problem. Take a minute to look at this slide. You're about the first people ever to see this slide. And it's an eye-opener. In terms of population, around now, Japanese population is about 20% over the age of 65. But they are consuming about 30% of all the healthcare expenditures. And of that, people over the age of 75 are consuming about half of that, right? Or about 20% of all healthcare spending in Japan. That's a lot. This isn't 2050 down below. Over to the right. It's 2025. That's not very far from now. This is 2008 already. The population is going to be 30% old, 70% young, right? But look at the medical care spending. This is, by projecting current spending trends, unless somebody does something, maybe they will, by that time, all of the people under the age of 65 will only be consuming 35% of healthcare spending. Half of all the healthcare spending in Japan will be going to people over the age of 75. Well, you look at that and you have to think it's a serious problem. I mean, I'm sounding a little derisive here, but to say that this isn't something that the government should be addressing would be silly, it seems to me. So what did they come up with? Well, I'll divide it in half. If you look at a program, you can look at its revenue side, you can look at its expenditure side. Let's look at them separately. On the revenue side, they enrolled everybody over the age of 75. On their 75th birthday, they're supposed to join OOPS. And they start paying premiums into it. This is supposed to include dependents of workers who are dependents on their children for tax purposes. They have to have a pretty low pension or else they're not dependents anymore. But there are a couple million people that whose incomes are low enough that their dependence on their children, they had not been paying any health care premiums. They'd been riding on their children's, but now they're supposed to pay it, although not quite yet, as I'll tell you in a minute. They had been free riders, and they were taking that away. Now, this year, despite what you may read in the papers, this year, by and large, the premiums that these over 65 people are over 75 people are paying into the system are, on average, probably about the same as what they were paying before. Except for these dependents, virtually all of these people are enrolled in national health insurance, the locally managed health insurance. In our book, we call it citizens' health insurance. But and they pay premiums to that. And in principle, at least, the amount that when they stop paying the COCOHO premium and start paying the new system, OOPS premium, it should be around the same level. In principle, it should be. However, over time, that premium is going to go up. And an article in Asahi last week said that after persistent reporting, the Kodosho hasn't wanted to talk about this, but after some questioning by reporters, they said they do have estimates, and probably older people's premiums are probably going to go up about 40% over the next 7 years. Right? That's a lot. I should have put a graph up for this, but I said before that older people paid about 10% of what they were consuming in health care, 40% was shared by younger people's health insurance, and 50% was paid by taxes. In the new program as well, the older people themselves, with these premiums I'm talking about, are supposed to be paying 10% of the total. And the other shares are the same as they were before. In other words, it didn't change much this year. But the share of the older people is supposed to go up as the demography changes, as the ratio of older people to the active population changes, right? So it's going to go up over time. So as I say, correspondingly, the younger people who are now paying about 40% of it, their share is going to go down by the same amount. In other words, the older people's share will go up to like 13%, and their share will go up to, if I can calculate this correctly, about 37%. And on the other hand, their individual ones aren't going to go down because they're going to be more old people, and they're going to be less active people. That population is shrinking. So spending is still going to go up, but it is going to cut their share a fair amount. I'm sorry, that's the same point I just made. As throughout the whole system here, up till now, forevermore, as far as we can tell from the legislation, taxes will continue to spend to cover 50% of this. Now, here's an interesting point. I only stuck this in the talk at the last minute, but it's so interesting that, as I said before, something like out of a normal worker in an ordinary Kumeyaay health insurance, probably about 30 of every 100 yen that he's paying in is actually going to the older people, but he doesn't know that. It's actually a pretty well-known fact. It's not a secret, but it's not obvious. But with this new system, they're supposed to start putting this on everybody's payslip. So they'll look at their payslip and say, yikes, I'm paying 12,000 yen here in health insurance, and 4,000 yen of it is going to old people I don't even know. This is interesting. I mean, it's a pure neoliberal reform. This is accountability, right, American neoliberal economists and Japanese neoliberal economists, everybody, there is no free lunch. Everybody should know what they're paying for. Political scientists are horrified when we see this. You know, to run a program successfully, it has to be a little misty. You know, you don't need people to be able to calculate exactly what they're paying, or for that matter, what they're getting. American Social Security is a beautiful example of that. Rich people pay in a little bit more, they get back a little bit more. The input is regressive, the output is progressive. Figuring out how you stand in it individually isn't too easy to do, and that works fine. It's worked fine for years and years. So I don't know. I mean, you know, this. I think the guys put it in. Again, this is pure, exactly what you'd expect from the Shimon Kaigi to do, and I think they want it because I think they want people to start putting pressure on to cut this down even more and leave those old people sitting there, you know, either paying for it for themselves if they can or not. They don't much care. So it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. Okay, so that's the revenue side of the new program. Here's the expenditure side of the new program. And this is interesting. Japanese healthcare works on a fee schedule. All the procedures, drugs, devices, tests, whatever, is all on a fee schedule that's set nationally. It's changed every, that's what this book is about, is mostly about how the fee schedule works. Changes nationally. It's the same in a hospital. It's the same for an individual doctor. Same for all patients and any health insurance. Until now, this new system sets up a new fee schedule for old people that is separate from the regular system. The long-term goal for this seems to be to try to constrain spending on too much, from the Ministry of Welfare's point of view, too much high-tech spending at the end of life. We all hear about people hooked up to machines and all that stuff. Big problem in the U.S. and Japan, every place else. Instead, this new, it's supposed to emphasize sort of prevention, sort of coordinated care. They have a plan for zaitaku-i, which is sort of home care doctors. I won't go into it, but the idea is to sort of take care of people's chronic illnesses better and to move away from high-tech interventions. And they hope, at least, to give them the benefit of the doubt, to get more appropriate treatment for older people and at lower cost, I think, is the objective of doing this. Now, the tactics in this whole program, in a way, were sort of clever. Because when the program started, right now, it actually changed very little. The new fee schedule is 99.9% identical to the old fee schedule. Only on a couple of trivial things is it any different. And the new premium structure is supposed to be the same for young people and for old people. So they didn't really change anything now. The point is that after it was enacted, well, and then they were also clever because the LDP realized, gee, if we start newly charging these dependents of old people a premium, all hell's going to break loose, so we'll postpone it for 6 months, and even then we won't charge the whole premium. So they were already kind of worried about the political reaction, although not political enough. So you could say that those were sort of clever tactics in a way to let the furor die down, and then the actual changes, practical changes, will occur in the future. However, most of what they did was dumb to the extreme. The most obvious problem, just like the pension records, people had to have their new insurance system card in order to get it. And as you all know, if you read the papers, lots and lots of people, I forget, anywhere from 10% to a third, didn't get them in time. So the ministry had to say, well, it's okay, you can use your old card and all. I mean, that's, I mean, just incompetence, just sheer, nothing else can be said. Actually, that was serious in a way, but more serious was that the preparation for this, and particularly the explanation, as we say in Japanese, communication about this, was just awful. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. People still don't know what's going on. It's very difficult to find out how this program is supposed to work. And again, even if you look carefully in Japanese, and nobody knows what the real change in individual people's premiums was, because it turns out the Japanese government has never known what premiums they were charged by their local governments. Kokuho, most of you are probably in Kokuho if you're long-term residents, and you may know that your ku or your city charges has one formula, and your neighbor across the border has some other formula you may be paying. So without grasping, you can't tell how it's going to change unless you know what it is now. So people were, all these people were coming out of the woodwork saying, my premium's going up like this. And they were saying, well, in principle, it's not. Well, people don't find that, you know, particularly helpful. So all of that sort of thing was really a disaster. And what, in a way, was the worst problem was the treatment of low-income people. Low-income people get charged lower premiums. They did under Kokuho, and they do now under the new system. There's a complicated little formula for doing that. But it turns out that lots of localities had been subsidizing their low-income people, so they were paying little or no premiums. But those subsidies don't come into the new system, so their stuff was going up. Another point that's raised no end of hell is that now this new premium is supposed to be deducted from your pension, unless your pension is really small. And it turned out people really hate that. And for people whose pensions are pretty small, even if they're not completely small, it's kind of a burden to have that money taken out in advance. It's taken out in a whole 2-month increment. and at least your pension, it seems to be a lot smaller than it was, you know? And people reacted against that very strongly. All of that turmoil yesterday, big meeting yesterday at the welfare ministry of all these things, and all the LDP and the opposition parties, they're all meeting like crazy about this program. And the government and the LDP has just promised to do something about this low-income problem, to reduce or take away people's premiums, to get rid of this problem, because they're very vulnerable on this issue. But when you think about it, for one thing, obviously it's a fiscal problem. Somebody's got to pay for those things, so it blows the whole fiscal arguments, because it'll make it worse than it was before. But the other thing is, administratively, how do you do it? How do you handle it? It's almost impossible. I could go on and on about this, and I won't. I'll talk about it in the Q&A if you like. But let me ask, how bad is this plan, really? Well, in a way, this year it actually isn't that big a deal. These points I've made aside, fundamentally it isn't really changing things that much this year. So some of this turmoil and opposition is overblown. Lots of it that you see in the papers is overblown. And in a way, I have a lot of sympathy for the notion of trying to increase the share that's paid by older people themselves, so long as you do it with people who have enough income to do it. Income distribution is very skewed among older people, so there are a lot of people with a lot of money, but a lot of people that have no money at all, and you really have to take that into account better than they have. But in principle, this doesn't seem to me to be such a bad idea. However, one of the words you hear the most about this is sabetsu. And sabetsu is a very powerful word in Japan. I mean, discrimination, it's a powerful word in English too, but Japanese take it very seriously. And older people are saying, why do we need a whole different system? Why should we have a fee schedule? In other words, a medical delivery system that's different than younger people, you know? And in fact, if it seems to me the only reason for doing this in the first place is so that you somehow or other can ration healthcare for older people. Healthcare in Japan is not rationed, American conservatives to the contrary notwithstanding. Anybody can get any healthcare they want as long as the doctor says it's okay. But this would seem to be a move toward trying to ration particularly high-tech healthcare for older people. And for people to call that hurry up and die, that's not so dumb. I mean, what else is it supposed to mean if you're going to say, you know, this is an extraordinarily difficult issue. This end-of-life stuff is really extremely difficult in the U.S. too, and nobody knows what to do about it. But boy, a government if you start having government policies aimed at getting them to unplug machines or not give people too much care, it's politically very difficult, and ethically, you know, you have to wonder about it. So I'm sure they're pretty sorry they got involved in this. Well, as I say, end-of-life is a tricky issue. I'm sorry they got involved in this. They're sorry. I bet they got involved in this in the first place. Naoki and I were just, we taught a class about this today, and we were just saying to each other, the Minchuto has said this whole program should be abolished, and they're going to introduce a bill into the upper house to do it. And the LDP is saying, no, we're just going to modify it, you know, we're going to change it, we're going to do this. And they said on NHK Toron program last Sunday morning, when the Minchuto said this, they said, well, what are you going to put in its place? You know, how are you going to solve the problem? Well, my view is there isn't actually any immediate, this thing isn't solving any problems in the first year anyway, because they're not changing anything. It's not like there's some fiscal crisis. They have to do something in the long run. But this program, this way of doing it may be fundamentally flawed. But at least now it's got so much baggage on all the crap that's come out because of the crappy way they did it. I think the LDP and the welfare ministry would be very well advised to scrap this program. Moshiwake gozaimasen, apologize to everybody and say, we'll try again. We focus in on this problem. It's a serious problem. Somebody has to do something. We screwed this up and we're sorry. Because if they can get out from under it, they'll save themselves so much trouble. It wouldn't be that easy. I mean, there would be problems to ending it too, but they could do it. But Naoki is sure, and he knows these people better than I do, that the ministry is never going to go along with this. They would never admit a mistake to this extent. Masazoe is a political scientist, as you probably know. Some of you probably know him. And you'd think as a political scientist, he'd have enough sense to figure out what the politics of this is, but the bureaucrats may not let him get away with it. Okay, what can we say? I'm running way behind, I'm sorry. What can we say about healthcare patterns of decision-making and healthcare policy? Healthcare policy in Japan and every place else is the politics of big interest groups negotiating with each other. Anybody that's following American politics doesn't have to be reminded of that. It used to be that policy was basically shaped by the Ministry of Health and Welfare and then was negotiated mainly with the Ishikai, also with the LDP. OOPS, as I said, was a top-down policy, came out of the central administration. And you could say that their political idea to do something good, Koizumi was trying to do post office reform again. This is my interpretation of it. Big radical moves, chop off, build a new system and all. Well, I'm of the school that thinks that postal reform has been kind of a disaster, but whether or not you think it works for postal reform, clearly it didn't work for health care. And the whole thing was really badly screwed up. And you could make an argument. If you wanted to be nice to the bureaucrats, I don't know if there's any reason to be, but if you want to be nice to them, you could say, well, if you do policies that aren't their invention, and you push these policies on them and tell them to make it work, it's not likely to work very well. And maybe that's what happened here. Very briefly about long-term care. It needs a lot of explanation. I'm not going to really get into, but I will mention in the expansion period, the Gold Plan was passed in 1989. I always call this more important than long-term care insurance because it established a government responsibility for socialization of care by expanding kind of Swedish-style welfare for people. It's clearly political. It was an election promise in the February 1980 election, and was motivated by attacks from the Socialist Party again, the same pattern again. And the Gold Plan in a lot of ways really succeeded. The use of services by older people just went up incrementally. That meant that it started to spend a lot of money. This money can only come out of tax revenues under that system, and people started to think, uh-oh, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to raise taxes. We can't raise taxes. So, and also there were any number of administrative problems. There was no way to determine eligibility. Service delivery was chaotic. So they came up with a new plan. The plan came completely out of the Ministry of Health and Welfare, although other people have somewhat different arguments. Kaigohoken, or long-term care insurance, passed in 1997, started in the year 2000. This is my opinion as an analyst, not my preference, but my analysis of it says that Kaigohoken fixed the financial and the administrative problems of the Gold Plan really well. The program has been very effective. It was worked out within the Ministry of Health and Welfare. After they had their plan, they negotiated it with the doctors, with local governments, with various other people. But this really was a bureaucratic product. Spending did go up more than planned, as you'll see in the newspapers all this time, largely because lighter care people, people whose needs were not so heavy. In fact, people who in Germany who have a long-term care insurance program or most other countries wouldn't be getting any services whatsoever. They got them in Japan, they liked them, they signed up for them, and spending went up. So there was, to turn to the current scene, there was a big reform in 2006 that did cut back the program substantially, but it cut back by reducing the services for these lighter care people substantially under the fig leaf of we're going to move them into preventive services so that they won't get feeble as they get older. You can take that seriously or not, but the main point was they're going to cut down the spending of those people, but they very much kept the whole core of the program for everybody. Anybody that would have been covered in Germany, nothing happened to them, and they continue. This was successful. Spending leveled off. It's interesting that this was a fairly substantial cut, albeit I think a reasonable one to my mind, but it was fairly substantial, and yet it really was passed with very, very little problem. It was opposed by the Minshito and the Diet, but they didn't make a big deal about it. There were demonstrations by provider groups particularly, but they came at the end of the upper house project. They came at the end. At the time when they were mostly talking to each other, and it really didn't amount to much. Now, more recently, you may have read about, it's been in the papers just in the last 2 weeks, that people are starting to notice that there are real labor force problems for the first time in Kaigohoken. You can't keep the staff because you can't pay them enough. You can't pay them enough, on the one hand, because they probably cut their budgets back a little bit too much the last time they changed the fee schedule, so they're on very lean budgets, on the one hand. And on the other hand, the economy, believe it or not, has gotten better. Employment at the moment. This problem may be solved for them, because Japan may well be in a recession by 6 months from now. But for the moment, salary levels and worker demand is up, and so they can't keep their people. They're worried because their turnover rate in a year goes up to about 20%. In this field in the United States, the turnover rate in a year is 140%. So you know, by comparison, they're still not in that bad shape, but people are worried about it. I think I said this here. All the political parties said the other day they're going to support an increase in the fees paid to providers so that they can pay people more, both in fiscal terms, and technically that's a little tricky, but presumably they can do it next year. Of course, that means more spending. And as we look ahead at the announcement that came out of the Finance Ministry's Fiscal Council, this is a different bunch. They're always the spokesman for conservative points of view in fiscal policy, and they have said that our target to keep Social Security spending down for next year is going to be long-term care insurance, and we're going to change this, and we're going to change that, and we're going to cut it way back. So we'll see. This kind of story isn't going to go away. It's going to be around for a while. And when we talk about the, what's going to happen? When we talk about how does decision-making look in the long-term care field, it's not without interest groups, but provider groups are small. They're getting a little more powerful, but they haven't been around very long. By provider groups, I mean home help agencies. Nursing homes have always been around, but they're really a pretty puny, and they've never been very active. Frail old people, the people that are subjects of Kaigohoken, it's a little different than people that receive pensions, right? It's 10, 12% of the old people population. These people are not going to be politically active, let's face it. Their caregivers might be, and they have been a little bit, but it doesn't, as voters, they're not, it's so far, at least in my opinion, it hasn't been a political factor, either as voters or as interest groups. However, Kaigohoken is very popular with the general public. It has been from when it was first proposed in the mid-80s, and it's in the mid-90s, and it still is. But the public support is kind of passive. So the initiative for changes in this program have always been in the hands of the bureaucrats. I mean, this is a relatively new program, but in long-term care, it's always basically been in the hands of the bureaucrats, as in these other fields. They're now under pressure from, the ministry is under pressure from the economizers, and we'll have to see how that works out. And I will say, I've been kind of mean about the Kōrosho with reason, but I think they really deserve a lot of credit for the long-term care program, which was invented de novo in Japan. No other country has anything like it. And I think they thought it through carefully. They thought of most of the problems. And I will also give a kind word to Higuchi Keiko, another feminist who backed this program up well. Some people think they were more important than I think them, but they certainly were helpful in getting it through, and that's kind of a first. I mean, how many victories do feminists get in Japan? So all in all, I have pretty good feelings about Kaigohoken, and I continue to study it. Okay, this is really short, happily. Old people, Axel Klein sent me a message, asked me a couple of questions, and he was interested in what's the role of people in all this policy making, and particularly old people themselves. Old people are not an interest group, however many times you hear it. They aren't really anywhere in the world that amounts to much. There are pensioner groups in Germany and other places. You see them. You see them in Japan. I don't know if they're still around, affiliated with the labor unions. But AARP in the United States is kind of a, AARP used to stand for American Association of Retired People. It doesn't anymore. Now it just stands for AARP. It's just a logo. It no longer has a name. But in a way, it's an interest group, but mostly it's an insurance company that has a sort of a public policy advocacy on there for window dressing, to exaggerate a little bit. But as you look at old people policy around the world, active old people going after things is not a big explanation for what goes on. Now, in other countries, we have had the unions and we have had the left-wing parties, which have basically been stalwart allies of programs for older people. Used to be sort of true in Japan, but we don't have them anymore in Japan. So it's just not an issue. So what we do have is politicians and programs for older people in general, pensions, health care, and certainly long-term care. They're popular programs because the public sees a need for them, for their own parents or for society as a whole. These programs in Japan still have a pretty good image. But my impression is that for the most part, politicians have been doing this for the sake of their image, for looking like good policy people, approaching popular policies. They're not doing it particularly to attract old people's votes. However, recently, recently, very recently, offending older people has gotten to look pretty serious, right? Because when you start talking about raising their premiums, taking their premiums out, out of their pensions, to talk about giving them a separate system for younger people, you know, that kind of thing, it brought a strong public reaction. It didn't happen with the LTCI reform in 2006 for whatever reason. It didn't affect as many people, and I don't think it affected them. You know, it's services for mildly frail older people. You know, it's a different question than pensions or healthcare for a whole lot of people. So the backlash against OOPS was quick and it was powerful. To what extent was it actually from old people, and from what extent was it sort of yodong? Was it sort of general public opinion? I have no idea. I wasn't here at the time. I had no way to really trace it. I don't know if anybody really knows, but I think it's a question. But boy, that hurry up and die slogan, that really had a lot of bite. I don't know who it was bugging, but it bugged an awful lot of people. And again, not without reason. And the opposition jumped on this as well. They should. That's what opposition parties are for. And now again, the LDP has said that they're going to revise it substantially. So that's a real big impact of public opinion. But such cases are, I can't think of another case that's anything remotely like it in the old people field, which is all I'm looking at here. So what do we learn from all this? The voice of the people is strongest as a negative rather than being positively for something. That's true about old people it's true in general, actually, to tell you the truth, but it's particularly true about older people in the U.S. and every place, and in Japan. Another point is that with old age policy in Japan, we don't really see any policy cleavages. What's a policy cleavage? A policy cleavage is you take the population, you ask them a question, 30% of the people say yes, 30% of the people say no, 30% say, I don't know. But people are disagreeing with each other. That's called position politics, as a political scientist word for it. And we don't see it very much, or hardly at all, in old age politics. It's always the people want this. This is what Nihon no Kokumin want this. It's like the people against the government or the people against the political parties. Well, you make a think about it, that doesn't make any sense. Why should the political parties, you know, I mean, the government, it sort of wants to be responsible and trim money, but I mean, there's not a fundamental opposition between the government and the people, or at least I prefer not to think so. But in this area in Japan, we don't really see any policy cleavages among public opinion on any of these issues. As I say, there is a big real debate in pensions, but you can't find any poll results that tells you which of the public prefer one or another. If you just ask it with the party labels, they'll give you the answer that their party supports, but they don't actually understand what the difference is. Right? And on these other issues, for all practical purposes, all the people are on the same side. There isn't really any disagreement. But, you know, it's a funny thing that's true of Japanese politics in general. I've made that, and other people have made that observation. There are not many position issues in Japan other than the old classic cultural politics issues. What's the position of the emperor? Should we revise the constitution? Is the U.S. security treaty legal, or should we have more of a military or not? Those questions, you get people are for it and people are against it. Anybody in the audience can think of another question like that in all of Japanese politics? Urban, rural, agricultural price supports, architectural standards, pardon me? Well, maybe. Kind of sodon sansei, kakudon hantai, yeah, I guess that's fair enough. Probably position of women and there are other issues, but I don't know. Everybody's kind of, real conservatives are against women, but other people are sort of vaguely in favor of women, but not just a question. They're called valence issues because people are stronger or weaker, more they think it's more important or less important, but there's not that much of a difference of opinion. But you're probably about right about women. And there are probably some other sort of morality kind of issues that might be true of, but not very many. In the U.S., we get this big age break on marijuana smoking. Young people think it's fine, old people think it's bad. Even those things, they don't come up very sharply in Japan. Well, anyway, believe it or not, that's actually my conclusion. The one process while I was in the U.S., or mainly after I came back, but I've been writing this book review. I've been trying to work on this talk, and I've been following what's going on as I've tried to get across to you just in these last few weeks here in the Japanese politics in this area. And the conclusion of all three of those things is that somebody should write a book about this stuff because it's not really covered very much. It is a little bit in my paper and a couple of the others in this great big book on demography, but there's not that much about public policy per se in here, and it's not in those five books I reviewed or anything else. Only economist stuff is, but economists get it all wrong, so somebody has to argue with them. So somebody has to write that book, and I don't think there's anybody else that could do it but me. That way there's an immodest statement, but I have been trying to do this for about 40 years, so I think I'm going to sit down and try and write a book about this. So maybe if I get it done, maybe the DIJ will invite me back and I can talk about it with you then. Thank you very much.